Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here with Matt Watson. Hi, Matt.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going, man. You know, I have been walking towards this bright, shining light that says exit, and I'm not sure what's on the other side of it. I think just an alley or a street corner or the back of a building, but I'm not really sure how to prepare for an exit. I heard that you might know a couple things about this. Is that true?
I've done it a couple times over the last 20 years. So yeah,
a few things. Did you end up in an alley or behind a building or anything like that? Or are we talking about a different kind of exit?
It's really more of a roller coaster than anything.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I want to talk all about that, but actually I do want to let everyone know before we do that, that today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io. We help you build a software team quickly and affordably. That's Matt and I's company. And we want to talk to you. You know, Matt, it's hard to build a team of software developers. And if you want to prepare for an exit, I have a feeling that you usually have had some good help along the way.
So it takes talent.
Getting an exit's a privilege, not a right. Am I correct?
It's a lot of hard work, a lot of preparation, a little bit of luck, and a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, man.
The tone of your voice sounded as if someone knows how tiresome that process might be. Is that a good way to describe it?
Well, and as other listeners may remember, we did a special Startup Hustle video about when I sold the company to Stackify, and that was a really cool video. It's like 20 minutes long or something like that. You can find it on YouTube and under Startup Hustle TV. But yeah, it was just kind of cataloged.
Well, we'll put a link to that in the show notes. Sure.
Cataloged what happened along the process of the exit itself, just kind of some daily video logs. And by the end of it, I definitely looked a few years older and tireder, and I felt like I should have gray hair. Like, it's just an exhausting process of going through the whole process of completing a transaction.
Yeah, now, and I want to talk all about that. And this is, you're the expert here, but you know, for those of you listening, a business exit is the selling of ownership in a company to investors or other in another company or entity. And an exit strategy is a plan for the business or a business owner to reduce or liquidate their stake in the business. Now, exits come in a lot of shapes and forms. Sometimes they're to private equity groups. Sometimes they're to other companies. Sometimes, I mean, I would still say an exit in some regards is the IPO, because for the founder, the initial shareholders, that's a changer. You know, it changes a lot of different stuff. But, you know, when it comes to, I mean, Matt, what did I miss there?
Well, an exit could be any kind of selling a business. And sometimes it could also be buying business partners out, or, you know, great grandpa is just passed away and now we've got to do something with the estate. I mean, there can be a lot of different reasons and types of transactions there.
And one person's exit is another person's acquisition.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's because if you're not, then you're just shutting the business down. Now, that said, sometimes acquisitions kind of result in that because, you know, you mentioned being the founder of Stackify, and that's was the founder of Stackify, which was acquired by Huntington Beach-based company Netreo, in which, you know, and like, we don't have to get too centered around that, but Stackify essentially becomes a Netreo product at that
right.
point.
Yep.
And they have a name, but some of that, like, but to give you some context, like the actual business entity of Stackify was absorbed by Netreo. So there's one entity there or whatever. And, you know, that's essentially what an exit is. Now, you know, when it comes to, so these are like mergers and acquisitions, you know, selling your stake, like you had mentioned, to a partner advisor. I think family succession is a good one. Now, the whole legality of a corporation itself, it doesn't die. It's eternal, meaning like, but people do. And sometimes those people own ownership stake.
Well, and the family succession thing is actually one of the big issues around inheritance taxes, right? So let's say you own a family business and so-and-so dies. Well, if you have to pay the inheritance taxes or the, you know, death tax or whatever you want to call it when somebody dies, potentially you've got to sell the company to pay the tax. Like it literally forces good companies to be sold off just so the taxes can be paid. And that's one of the downfalls of the tax structure, the way that works. You can't just pass it down to, you know, the children or whatever. You almost you're forced to sell it just so you can pay the taxes.
And well, in some cases, you know, and there have been some changes with some of that. I mean, it depends on what it is and how, but yes. And that's, you know, another thing too, is, well, you talk about succession and that if in that form of quote exit, traditionally, businesses don't do well when they go from dad to kid. The success rate of generational businesses is really low. And that's often attributed to the fact that the kids don't have the same passion that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. So now when we talk about an exit, so those are some forms and some whys, and, you know, we've covered a lot of that. You know, we're here in part 48 of our series, and we've talked about what is an acquisition. So you can go back and listen to our prior episode in that. We've talked about raising capital in later stages. Maybe sometimes it's time to quit. That was the 45th piece. Now, in this particular case, you know, when it comes to preparing for an exit, now, buddy, I feel like I got to sidecar on some of this, and I chuckle a little bit because this, I mean, honestly, I don't think there's really a way that we're going to, okay, theoretically, you would think that this would be a joyous thing for a founder.
No, it's not.
Right. I know. That's why I'm chuckling. I'm like sitting here. It's like, you think everyone's like, whoa, yeah, exits. And then they're like, you know, but the people I don't think everyone I've ever talked to was like, you know what? It was the whole path up to the actual moment we signed was glorious. No, that's
no,
the
part. It's glorious if you're a shareholder. It's a nightmare if you're one of the executives of the company, and especially the CEO, CFO, COO, you know, certain positions that have to deal with all this crap, right? Because you spend weeks and weeks and weeks having, you know, spending, you know, 50-80%+ of your time dealing with all the due diligence stuff and talks and this and that and whatever, while still trying to run a company at the same time, right? And the lucky shareholders that make a bunch of money at the end of it, you know, they don't really have to do anything. So it's glorious for them. But the executive team that's got to actually get the transaction done, it is an absolute nightmare.
Yeah. And, you know, so, well, let's just jump right in. So, okay. The due diligence process, Matt, why does due diligence exist?
Well, if you're buying something, you want to know what you're getting, right? You want to know, do people like the product? You know, how much people really pay for it? Do they really have customers? Who are the customers? How long have they been a customer, right? You want to see all the bank records, accounting records. I mean, you want to prove what it is that you're selling is what it is, right? Instead of just taking their word for it, you've got to do your due diligence. And take, we were acquired by Netreo, which was, you know, primarily owned by a private equity group. Well, and that private equity group also has other investors, right? So a lot of it is CYA, cover your ass all the way down, right? Like Netreo wants to make sure they're covered, that they're doing the right thing, but the private equity group wants to be covered and make sure that their, you know, investors are satisfied and nobody made some mistake along the way, right? That's going to cause some lawsuits or something like that. They want everything, you know, every rock has to be turned over and all that kind of stuff. Just to make sure everything is what they say it is, and you're not buying vaporware.
Confirmation is the one word answer, right?
Confirmation of everything.
Now, but that it's that as you may have figured out by the long string of things that Matt just laid out, confirmation isn't as simple as just like, hey, okay, cool, we're good. Now, that can exist in different shapes and forms because, as you and I talked about, so Matt, you've gone through two exits. It wasn't just the Stackify one.
Yeah.
You went through one with Vince Solutions in 20, was that 2012? It's 2012, right?
Yeah, I think 2011.
Okay. So that said, that process, like they could be vastly different. The level of confirmation or the degree of, well, for we could just say scrutiny, can be different for different parts of the business. So you have to look at the business as like a 500 piece puzzle. And when they're confirming that the pieces do in fact fit together, some puzzles are a lot harder to do than others. And then some people are better at doing puzzles maybe.
Well, and so the first time around, I was the chief technology officer and I wasn't involved in all the detail work of the diligence, you know, our like operations staff and CFO, you know, dealt with most of it. You know, I had to deal with meetings around our technology and our tech stack and how it worked and, you know, some diligence around the technology side, but I didn't have to deal with all the diligence around like financials and accounting and stuff where the second time around here I did. And I got the spreadsheet pulled up. I could go through the whole list with you. It's a total nightmare. And I think back to your point a second ago, it really depends on the type of company that's being acquired and maybe the risks or the perceived concerns or risks by the buyer, right? So maybe the buyer is really concerned about customer churn. And so they want to dig really, really deep into all the customer history and how much they pay and whatever. And they may go really deep in certain topics like that. Or it could be they're like, hey, we're trying to figure out how we integrate the companies together. And they may also bring in third-party consultants to talk about the market positioning and maybe talk to, you know, Gartner and Forrester and things like that. You know, if we buy this company, what, you know, how do we do this? How do we go to market? I mean, it really depends on the situation. And they may go way deeper in some areas than in others. Partly depending on what their plan is, you know, if they're like, oh, we want to integrate these things together technically, well, they may go way deeper on the technical side to figure out how to integrate them together. Where if they're just buying it of like, oh, it's a really profitable business, we're just going to buy it and let it run as is, we don't really care, you know, they may not dig very deep into certain things. So it just kind of depends on the scenarios.
And in some cases, there may be a requirement of some third party validation. Depending on the size of the transaction and who's doing the transaction, like if a publicly traded company is acquiring another publicly traded company, you can pretty much guarantee that there's a third party. There's a long list of third party audits that are occurring, everything from, it could be compliance, accounting, I mean, dude, it's going to go on and on and on.
Well, and even selling a private company to another private company, there's some sort of SEC approval or whatever it is. I honestly don't remember the exact details, so anything I say is going to be wrong here. But I know at Vend Solutions, we had to do that, and we weren't really worried about it being denied. And it, on the SecFi side, maybe our transaction was small enough that we didn't need it. I don't know. But there is – that even happens on the private transactions. It's got to be based on some dollar threshold or something. I don't remember what they are, but.
Yeah. And then some of these things too. So, all right, you've had this long pathway of building a business, and with it, you might've taken money from certain people. You may have created a board. You may have created a lot of different things. You may have management employee buyouts to consider. You got a whole, like the exponential nature of the check marks gets pretty juicy and big quickly, right?
Well, and honestly, it's also one of those things where when the company is younger and it's, you know, let's say it's not very successful, it's not making a lot of money or whatever, it's just kind of flying under the radar. Nobody cares as much either about equity and ownership and all these things, right? But as soon as the company gets really successful or there's talks about an exit, then everybody becomes like sharks around equity and stock options and all these things, right? And, you know, business partners fighting with each other about their equity shares, investors getting involved, whatever, right? But, you know, when you're not in that situation, nobody really cares. And then all of a sudden it becomes a hot topic all the time because you got a bunch of sharks swimming around trying to get their piece of the big prize they think is coming.
We've talked about that quite a few times, and it's funny. You look at which of the 800 episodes that we've published did we talk about that, Matt? Because now, you know, I say that jokingly because I don't know. I don't know if it was episode number 108 or 13 and 19 and 57, but this is a good example. If we were preparing for an exit on our podcast, I might need to know that. So in a lot of cases, when you're preparing, like you talk about this, so why is it miserable for a CEO or a COO or a CFO or whatever? This is a time when you are really can end up being tasked with undoing a ball of rubber bands that you may have created a long ass time ago.
Well, and as we talk about preparing for an exit, right, you've got the early preparation of it, and then you've got the like process of actually doing it. And you know, when you're preparing for it way in advance, a lot of times companies will focus on improving their profitability or EBITDA and things like that because they're, you know, they think their valuation is going to be based off a multiple of EBITDA or something, right? So they're trying to, they may not hire as many people, they may cut some costs, they may do things like that to try and make themselves look better on paper. You know, so there's a lot of different things that may go on when you're preparing for an exit, like kind of way in advance. Trying to optimize the business to get it in a better financial state so it looks better, right? The amount of debt, all these types of things that the business has. But a lot of it is the preparation of actually doing the transaction is a whole nother type of preparation. You have both.
Yeah. And that's, and you know, there's usually a lot of lawyers, accountants, consultants, and other people that definitely benefit from that, right?
Oh my God. Yeah. All people you don't want to talk to. And that's the hardest thing about all this that people have got to understand is it's just like raising capital. Anytime you're raising capital, I mean, that becomes almost like your full-time job and you can't run the business the same way. Like you can't do what you would normally do. And going through a transaction like this, even when you're just dating potential investors, just like you're raising capital, you're going and you're meeting with potential companies that would acquire you and building pitch decks and data rooms and all this kind of stuff, doing presentations. When we sold Vend Solutions, I think we went to California 2 or 3 times and met with like over 10 different people. And it was just like, you know, several months of just flying all over the country, having meetings and all this stuff. It's an insane amount of work. And you can guarantee that like more than 50% of your time on a daily basis is spent doing some sort of diligence or meetings or whatever it is.
So there's some kind of a a factor that you've got to consider amidst all this stuff going on. First off, you're probably running a somewhat robust business, if not a full, like a full on rocket ship. So there, that's going on. Like Matt, you're saying, hey, here's half my time going to this. And then the, from a, like a human and a reality component, I mean, there can be a lot of money on the line here. And yeah, let's be realistic about the fact that like, that's stressful. Like, cause Matt, to the best of my knowledge, those deals that you made weren't fully done until you saw a wire transfer into your bank account, at which point then you have the money. And until then, here's the thing, like realist, and these things fall apart all the time. And
That's what our next episode's about.
And well, so, and, you know, and you get, you, well, you get into that and, you know, you also, you, so we were talking about like the past episodes, you talk about people fighting and being sharky about stuff. Like the, here's the thing is when it comes to the human psyche and personality types, every stuff, every personality type, every human, everyone, your worst parts come out when you're under stress.
Sure. Yeah, you talk about preparing
so,
for...
So now you get a bunch of stressed, busy people with a bunch of money on the line, and you're like, oh my God. I mean, Matt, really, what was that like? Like it? Well, I know in the Vent Solutions one, it was a little different because you had a lot more partners. Stackify, you were the primary owner. I mean, in any case, was is there... You know, we don't have to throw anyone under the bus, but did you see anyone freak out or implode along the
way?
Well,
and so let's talk about that for a minute because... You've got the run up to it where you're talking about doing a deal and the and eventually the executive team kind of knows you're like, oh, we're talking, you know, they're talking to different people and you may need to meet with them, right? Like, oh, the potential buyer wants to meet the team. So the executive team knows. And then eventually you get to the point of like getting an LOI and the deal's, you know, supposed to happen within, you know, 2 months or 3 months or whatever. And then you get to closing and, you know, finally closing the transaction, right? So all along that process, there's a bunch of other things that happen that end up causing stress points. And so, for example, at Stackify, as soon as we announced the deal, our head of sales decided to leave. He's like, I just don't see my position once this merger goes through. So I'm out of here. Right. So now all of a sudden we're, you know, got to frantically figure out, oh, shit, now, well, is that going to mess up our deal? You know, now who's going to do that work over the next few months while we're trying to sell the damn company? Right. And then you get into retention type things and people being nervous about the deal and trying to figure out, okay, well, if we have an earnout or whatever over the next 6 months, 12 months, I really need Joe on the team. And if Joe leaves in the next 12 months, we're screwed and it could cost us millions of dollars because he's super, you know, critical to the team. So then all of a sudden you got to babysit Joe to make sure he doesn't leave between now and the time the acquisition closes and then past the acquisition. And, you know, you just run into all these issues of trying to keep everybody on the bus. And a lot of times you've got people that, you know, maybe they're happy working at the company, but then once this gets announced, they start thinking about it. They're like, you know what? I've been happy here, but now seems like a time to consider my options, right? All of a sudden, like otherwise they may never have really thought about it. And you got the same thing once the acquisition closes and all of a sudden they're like, you don't work for Stackify anymore. You work for so-and-so, right? Then again, it creates those events and moments where people start reconsidering what they're doing today and making a change. And those events, you know, inevitably people quit, people leave. We had that at Stackify. You have a couple people leave for this, a couple people leave for that. They don't see what their job will be at the combined companies. They don't like who their new boss is, whatever it is. You got all this shit you got to deal with. And at the end of the day, right, you want this to be glorious and cash the check and all that, but it's not. Like, you're dealing with all this bullshit every day that is just stuff you don't want to deal with.
Well, you know, we mentioned it, you know, a few minutes ago that sometimes these things fall apart.
Yeah.
And, you know, in that scenario you mentioned, I mean, if this shit falls apart, or if it had, I mean, dude, you're out vital people with that.
Yeah, our head of one of our executives left.
Yeah. And well, I mean, and that's a very common thing. I actually want to talk a little bit more about that because I got some experience in that world too. So you know, Matt, one thing you should know is that today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Now, you know, in the process of talking to so many people at, you know, that want to use our services at Fullscale, and go to Fullscale.io, if you fill out the Getting Started page, I'll give you access to a resource portal so you can see some of the amazing team members that we have ready to join your team. Now, with that, the team is often a key component of the actual exit. Like if the team turns into vapor, you might have a different offer, you know, and like there are key, because we've talked about the different types of acquisitions. In some cases, that those acquisitions are more for the acquiring the team than the product or clients.
Yeah. I mean, it depends a little bit, right? I mean, if like at Stackify, we're being acquired by a private equity group and merging with somebody else. Let's be honest. They're probably okay if we lose a couple people here and there and can merge some responsibilities between the two companies and save some cost, right? So it's interesting because you kind of wonder, you know, how much they want to see a few people leave just so they can optimize the cost. And it's like, oh, we don't need two HR people anymore. We really only needed one anyway. So, man, we're really glad that Joe left because solved that problem. Right. I mean, you're going to get a little bit of that.
Yeah. And that's what I'm experienced with, because, you know, I've referenced working for, like 20 years ago, I was a manager in a retail chain that sold musical instruments, and they merged. So a private equity group bought that company and six others and mushed them all together. And like, so the idea there is you create a hub and a spoke. The concept is that operating 70 locations is only slightly more expensive than operating 40. So you are literally doing an acquisition to intentionally spot redundancy and then kill it. Now we talk about the pressure and the cattiness and the backstabbing and the shark infested waters that can happen when money comes on the line. This is just as bad, because you end up with people in like a whole bunch of organizations that know. These are usually smart people. They're like, okay, so I did this at company A, and now you have company A, B, C, D, E, and F. And you, if you're smart, you realize there probably aren't going to be seven of you. So as you mentioned, you get some people that they just bail. They just bail. They're like, you know what? I don't need this. Ain't no one got time for this. So they move on, and then you have to go through this process that is like, it's almost like taking people and making them reapply for their own job.
Yep.
And it's not fun. It's just not fun. And so here's the thing, it's because I've been on the other side of this table. So imagine this. All right. So Matt, you've worked for company A for 20 years and you've been a loyal employee. And now here comes this dude. It's like, Matt, tell me what you do here. Why are you important? Why are you valuable? What do you do? What do you like to do? What do you see as your future? And honestly, it doesn't land well on someone that's been really committed to, you know, these are oftentimes great people, but you got to sit down and sing for your supper again. And look, culturally, it's just, because here's the thing, you are reapplying for your own job. That is a real thing. That's actually what you are doing there. So in this case, seven companies get mushed together, and honestly, dude, 30% of people were then redundant. And that's where you see that, because here's the thing, that's where the profit is, because mushing these companies together, oftentimes they're middling kind of organizations, you know, like that need this kind of change, but that isn't a good culture. That isn't a good feeling. And this is a really common thing, because these kind of large scale acquisitions happen with mergers and acquisitions all the time. And, you know, let's just put it this way. It doesn't make coming to work fun every day.
Well, for sure, it makes everybody nervous, and not just the executive team that's working on the deal. It makes the employees nervous too. But every acquisition is different. You know, when Vin Solutions was acquired by Autotrader, literally like nothing changed. I mean, they really completely left us alone. They took over like our HR and benefits because we had their insurance and stuff like that. But as far as like our sales team and support team and engineering teams, all that kind of stuff, it was all left alone. Now, Netreo, when they acquired Stackify, Stackify was much smaller. We only had about 25 employees in the US, and then we had another 15 or something like that internationally. But it was more of a merger, like where the teams kind of merged together. And it's like, okay, now our support team is going to help support their product. And some of the teams kind of intermix, like the marketing teams. It's like, oh, now we have one marketing team, they're intermixing. And that of course has totally different outcomes than the Venn Solutions scenario, where it's like, everybody's just going to stay doing what they're doing and it doesn't really impact it. And honestly, if you could do it all over again on the Stackify side, that's really the best way to do it. It's like, just leave us alone, at least for a while.
Don't make us assimilate.
And have, you know, all new bosses and new jobs and new, all this stuff right the same first day.
So I have one other thing I wanted to share about. So that same company I mentioned had some issues, and a few years later ended up declaring bankruptcy. Now with that, there's a liquidation kind of exit as well. Meaning, and not a good liquidation. You look at these, like, okay, so Sears, Matt, you used to work there like a thousand years ago, right?
Yes.
Sears is still out there somewhere, but they are certainly not what they were even when you worked there and whatever. So when some of these, Kmart would probably, is Kmart still around? Do they still have Kmarts?
I don't think so.
I mean, there might be like five, right? Or like the last Blockbuster. There's still a Blockbuster in like Oregon, by the way. One, it's like a tourist destination. They have a documentary on Netflix. It's kind of fun. Because if you need a VHS tape, Matt, that's the place to go. But yeah, but these are like still exits. So we mentioned exits aren't always being acquired. So in those cases, when these liquidation events come in, like where they're liquid, I don't mean liquidating your equity. I mean, liquidating, closing down units and stuff like that. They're literally people that specialize in this, and they come in and they will sit down with the whole team and they're like, so, you know, there's 0% chance that this location will be open in 90 days. Why? Because this company has failed or something like that. And they're like, it's like the Grim Reaper showing up. And you know, so who has questions? And I remember hearing this account from this. It's like, well, is so-and-so still our regional manager? And they're like, regional manager is a forward thinking term when it comes to the company. And this particular region has no future. So therefore there are no longer regional managers. And, you know, they're literally telling you like, hey, look, you don't have a job. You don't have a future. Yeah. There's no path, none of this. And then here's the crazy thing is, and literally people get up in the middle of these presentations and just go home.
Yep.
You know, like, because I mean,
yeah, it's tough, man.
You're like, hey, I don't need this and I don't need to deal with it. And then you have this like really like skeleton crew. And it's like, I mean, it's like, it's literally like, you know, like, I mean, it's a very depressing feeling. And, you know, and then another thing too is, you know, you think that Mary works at the store and then she finds another job and she's like, yeah, I'll just start right now. Right? I don't give 2 weeks notice and do a lot of stuff. So it gets pretty messy. So there's a couple other things let's talk about with preparing for an exit, Matt. And like, you know, basically what we said is there's a, depending on the structure of how these things work, is also choosing new leadership. If it could be, because sometimes, all right, so let's just say Full Scale gets acquired, and whoever, right now I'm the acting CEO at Full Scale. Now, in my opinion, it probably wouldn't be great for our company if I just was gone tomorrow. So in some of these cases, they might want to transition. They may need to work new people in. Well, it's funny. We talked about Better.com, the guy that fired 700, 900 yes. people on Zoom. They pushed him out and then brought him back. So, you know, but in some cases things are toxic. Like, who did Microsoft just acquire? Activision?
Yeah.
Okay. For like a huge sum. It's funny what Oracle did. Was it Oracle that bought Cerner for 30 yes. million bucks, and Microsoft's yes. like, hold my beer, and spends like 60 billion on Activision. But Activision has been, okay, they have some toxic things going on in their company with their leadership or whatever, and they may want to oust a leader. So they have to figure out how to either keep people in place for continuity, because here's the reality, man. If someone wants to come buy Full Scale and they give us $100 million and you and I split it, I'm going to wake up that next day and probably think about doing other things than whatever it is that I did today.
Well, and we didn't talk about that yet, but that's part of the problem with this too, is once you get closer and closer to the money, you start spending more and more time on how to spend it too. That yeah. becomes a big distraction as well.
Speaking of which, there is a, there is a spot in the acquisition video, and I'm pretty sure you were building a supercar.
Was checking out the supercars.
You were struggling with what color to get.
Yeah. I never did buy one, but
we're gonna let people wonder what you say you didn't?
I didn't buy one, but
damn it. You killed the mystery. I was literally about to say, we're not gonna let you know whether or not. I mean, Matt, we could have drawn that out for a while.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I know. By the way, Matt's also the guy that pops the cork on the champagne on New Year's Eve at like 9:23, so we don't have to stay up so late.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, yeah. After he goes to bed, I keep popping the corks in his champagne, so it's all good. All right. So what about telling your employees?
Yeah, I mean, that's a difficult thing, right? And getting everybody together. And usually it is the worst kept secret, you know? Usually the rumor gets out some way or another. And it's
hard to keep, especially during diligence, because all of a sudden new faces showed up.
Yep.
You know, it's like, why? Yeah. And
people talk who are all the weird people coming into our office?
Well, what about telling your customers?
Yep. You got to tell them too. And there's a whole bunch of things you got to do when you actually do the transaction. My favorite of those, by the way, is changing the credit card number in about 73 different places you use a credit card. That's my favorite thing.
I'm going to share this, and I think it's okay, but I remember during your acquisition, and I said, Matt, what are your current responsibilities? Right now, I'm very overwhelmed changing out payment card numbers.
Yeah.
I said, how big is it? You're like, it's like 70 or 80 places. Now, look, that might not seem like a big deal, but go do it yourself. It's not really like what most people wake up and they're like, hey, I can't wait to do that. Okay. So all these things we mentioned, you know, like, look, we're being really committed to telling the real story of this stuff. So we're, you know, not trying to sound negative about it. I mean, this is just a reality. But at the end of it, Matt, I mean, let's come up to our approach pattern to ending on a high note here. Cause you know, if it does go well, how does it feel when it's done?
You know, it feels a little bit relieving. And, you know, we started the episode talking about getting on the roller coaster, and it definitely feels like you're on a roller coaster, and because it's up and down and hurry up and wait, like it's all of those things. And honestly, when it's all done and all the diligence is done, the legal paperwork is signed, it's almost like there's this weird calming effect that happens. And you just like hang out and everything is done. You're just waiting for the money to hit the bank account at that point. You've done all the hard work, and it's just like a relief, right? And then the deal closes, and then there's a bunch of shit to do because like I gotta change credit card numbers, and now I gotta meet 27 new coworkers and all the other bullshit that goes on. It's just a lot of work, and it's a lot of ups and downs.
Yeah. And I think the relief thing, I mean, I sense that with you. And I think that's got to come from a number of different things. One, being done with a bunch of shit that you weren't real excited about doing anyway. You know, Matt, so how realistic is the psychological pressure, especially at any point along the way, when it comes to knowing that there's a huge amount of money online, not only for you, but for your family, for your investors, oftentimes employees, what's that really like?
Well, it's for sure really stressful, right? And you know, as you're going through the process, that not only yourself are you getting this money, and it's a big deal for your own family, but all of your other shareholders, employees, and it's not all just the money, right? It's also the opportunity and the change for the employees. You know, talk about, you know, doing this ending on a positive note. I mean, one of the great things on the StackFi side is being able to go to our employees and say, look, now we're going to be part of this much bigger thing. That's, you know, more opportunities for you, more opportunities for growth. You know, they're going to invest in the company. You know, there's a lot of positive, like, personal and professional things that could come out of this for all of them, right? It's more job security, more, you know, career advancement, all those sort of things. As a shareholder and an owner, you know, of course it has its other positive benefits. But there's just so much work that goes into it and so much stress that goes into it. And you inevitably during these deals, there's always moments where it feels like the whole thing can fall apart. And I know we've got our next episode is going to talk a lot more about that in detail. But inevitably there's just a lot of stress and you run across different things that could blow the deal up. Like, oh, the director of sales left. Well, what is that going to do? Or, you know, we've got this partner that doesn't like the fact that we're doing the deal and they want to end their contract with us or whatever, right?
Or
like
a key client getting cold feet and, you know, maybe not, you know, buying into it. And, you know, that's another thing too, because that's why the diversity of a client list is important.
Yes.
Because some companies are fueled primarily, they might have like one mega account. It could be like half or more of your revenue. And if for some reason, you know, one of the things, and, you know, I'm not going to get too deep into this, but, you know, we've been pretty open over the years about Full Scale and people working at Stackify. We don't make a habit of talking about who our Full Scale clients are, but, you know, Netreo wanted to know that, that we weren't going to be in a position to jack up the prices, which is fair because they had, you know, 20 people on a team. And, you know, with that, there was a little, and that's just, you know, continuity. Mm-hmm. And I think that as we close this out, like, I think the thing that when I think about preparing for an exit, so it's almost like you have a couple C's here. There's the confirmation and then continuity, because continuity, I feel is probably the toughest part of this. Now, I mean, is continuity tougher than the confirmation?
Yeah, business continuity is huge, right? And at the end of the day, everybody wants that. Everybody wants the business to continue, you know, as is, and keep, you know, the status quo. And that continuity is really important. But inevitably, you have employees that leave and have problems, all these things that interrupt it. But that's what you want.
Well, there's things you can control and there's things you can't. You can control some of the confirmation stuff, meaning, like, you know, like if you've done a great job of having your shit together, honestly, that shouldn't be remarkably intimidating. It doesn't mean it's not a pain in the butt. But with the continuity thing, because people aren't always predictable and you can't, I mean, you know, they abolished slavery a long ass time ago, so you can't force someone to stay. And, you know, and there's components to that. And then, you know, another thing too, and I think that it's important to remember, is for a lot of your startups, you may have created small pools of shares and incentives. And, you know, like, there was a bunch of people that benefited from the acquisition of Stackify because they had been with the company for a long time and they had vested into some things. And, you know, and remember that could be as impactful or as major an event for them as it is for you to sell a huge number of shares. So,
well, in every deal is different, right? And in the Vin Solutions deal, you know, we sold the company for close to $150 million. And so there was a lot of money to spread around. And we had several people that got $1 million or close to $1 million at the end of the transaction.
Yeah.
You know, key employees, you know, our guy who's in charge of sales and, you know, different people, right? But we also, AutoTrader also gave out retention bonuses to key employees. So, you know, I had a couple developers on my team that had been with the company the whole time, but they never owned any stock, that all of a sudden now got, say, $100,000 bonus as a retention bonus. Well, that was enough money for them to, you know, buy a house or pay off their house or whatever. Yeah. Like, it was a huge deal. Like, it was a life altering amount of money for them, $100,000. So
that was my point. So like that can be a good thing too. You know, like I'm saying it doesn't, they don't always freak out and scatter, but with that, like there it's, my point is it's stressful for them too. So I think the best way to handle any of this, and much like Matt said, all deals are different. I always say like all your clients are different. They're like snowflakes. They have different needs, different personalities, all of it, but just handle it with empathy, you know, because it's stressful, like all the way down the line. And if you can find a way to be empathetic, positive about it, and know that you're not getting to the end without getting through all these steps anyway, I think that's maybe the one of the better ways to look at it rather than, I don't know, just get up and try to get it done. Well, Matt, we're almost through the series, you know, and the fun part is, Matt, don't you have a weekly show coming out soon?
Yeah. Yep. I believe I'm the Friday show. Is that right? Coming forward?
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
I just show up and talk to this microphone,
but
I'm no longer in control of any of these things.
Yeah, but I've already started recording them. I'm not sure when they'll air, but I'm super excited to be a weekly host.
You know, it's March, the first weeks of March. So what are you going to do without me, bro?
You know, we're still going to do this. You're not off the hook.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right. But you know what? Because I think we already decided it. I've had a couple of people ask me what's next. I think we're going to talk crypto, NFTs, some other interesting things. But yeah, so, you know, Matt's going to have his own weekly show, which is long overdue. And Matt and Matt are still going to be on, you know, that's where this started, and we're committed to continuing it. You know, honestly, I love doing these series because it's not an interview and that same kind of conversation. I really enjoy sharing the experience and the facts and all of that. And, you know, Matt, now that you're in your 40s, it's time to get into that wisdom stage. So
that's right. I'm hitting my prime here soon, I think.
You like how I snuck that in?
Mm-hmm.
I also tried to sneak podcast co-hosts in as you were mentioning all the people that got paid. And you didn't hear it, but
I skipped right over
it. Yeah, I think I made it real though when I said it and we broadcast it to the world. So anyway, Matt, on to number 49. I'll talk to you soon.
See you guys.
Startup Hustle's brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.